Welcome to episode number 116.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle. And sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of Road Trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Road Trekking, the RV lifestyle podcast. No matter what type of an RV you have, a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV someday, this show is for you, because here we talk about being out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So we welcome you and are honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. This episode being released December 1st, 2016, and I apologize in advance if my voice sounds a little strained. It is because it is. I'm fighting some kind of a virus or whatever, and there might be a couple of pauses here for me to cough, but you know, the show must go on, and we've got a great show for you today. Lots of RV news, some fun stories, everything about a self-driving RV. Yes, it's in the future. To a story about a cantankerous bull moose in Montana, and then an update on these devastating fires about that have just done. They're incredible. You're going to have to see the video we'll link to and listen to the story about what's happening around the Great Smoky Mountains this past week. Just terrible, terrible fires. Plus, we got some tech ideas and a really interesting interview for those of you who travel to Florida, you snowbirds, about an amazing hiking trail that I bet you've never heard of. It's one of the best kept secrets in the National Trail Network out there. It's an incredible trail in Florida, and we just learned about it, and you'll learn about it too if you stick around with this episode. But right now, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hi, dear.
Hello, sir.
Well, we were supposed to be in Louisville, Kentucky today.
I know, I'm disappointed, but wasn't meant to be, I guess.
Wasn't meant to be. We canceled because I got sick. And second time in a month.
Well, I'm glad. Old? I'm glad you didn't recover the first time, and I think you were run down. And you did the 1,000-mile drive home, so I think it was all just too much.
Yeah, we drove home from our southern state's swing a couple of weeks ago. And we drove. It wasn't bad. You know, I'm used to driving that, but I'm blaming this all on our granddaughter, Jovi.
Well, so far I'm keeping my fingers crossed, because I caught it the first time we were around with this little virus. We both caught it, but I got better. And
I thought I got better
back.
Too.
It and, came back on you.
We saw her Thanksgiving, and then by the weekend, we noticed she had a cold, and by the time it came back, I had it again, and this has really laid me out. I was worried that it was pneumonia there for a while, but we did a lung X-ray, and it's fairly clear.
So. And the doctor had wanted you to have a lung X-ray anyway.
So I got that done, and now I just...
So now that's done.
There we go.
I don't have to argue with you about getting that done.
But we do apologize. We were hoping that we would be at the Louisville show, and the big... it's an industry show. It's not open to the public, but I'll have a news item report on it coming up in just a little bit. We'll talk about that, but we just couldn't make it. We would have had a drive about 400 miles and rushed through either late last night or early this morning, and then it just wasn't worth it with me being laid up. This is first time. It's not like me not to go.
I suppose I could have gone without you. I could have left you with Bo.
Don't say that.
Bo could have taken care of you.
Yeah, that reminds me. We got invited once out to, where was it? British Columbia, I think it was, to come out to an RV show. And they wanted us both to come out and do we do these seminars that we do at different RV shows and stuff. And, well, sure, we'd love to come, you know, and two of us, okay. So they called back about a week later, and we were, okay, let's get all the travel arrangements. They were making them, and... well, we looked at our budget, and to bring two of you out, it was too much. Can just Jennifer come?
Hey, what can I say?
They wanted you, not me. Hmm. Oh, man. But you were nice, gracious. You said, no, we're a team.
That's right.
We are a team. And it was fun. But anyway, we're sorry that we didn't get to Louisville, but now we're thinking maybe we'll take a look at the Tampa show and our schedule, and who knows, maybe we can do that.
Louisville show is special. It's different from all the others because it's the manufacturer's show.
I was looking forward to it because we're going to spend a lot of time with our friends at the Family Motor Coach Association, and they have a booth there, and they have so many great things coming up. Their family reunion in Arizona in March, and then they got a big one in the summer back in Indianapolis, and lots of changes there. They have lots of news, and we'll be talking about those over the next few months.
And we want to go to the one in Indianapolis because that was the very first one
that we went to. That was 5 years ago.
Yes, yeah. That was our first one.
It was. It was a lot of fun. So it's Christmas time, and we're going to actually stay put for a month here at our home in Michigan.
It might take you a month to get better.
Oh, don't say that. I'm missing that Florida sunshine already.
Oh, come on.
Come on,
we got a sunny day out there in Michigan. I'd have you out there hanging lights if you weren't wimping out on me.
Yeah, well, we got to do all that.
I got to be careful. I don't want that bug.
You don't want that bug. Well, listen, I'm tired of talking because my voice has given up. It's time for you to get to work.
All right.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
In small RVs, storage is always at a premium. Where do you keep all the things we need? Listen up. Here's one idea.
Hi, everybody. I'd like to share a tip that was given to me by Peggy Bechtel.
Well, in case you have an older road trek where you still have your feet out in the aisle, using your restroom, I have a tip for extra storage. You can get a nice shoe bag at Camping World and three tension rods, and you put a tension rod through the top and the bottom of the shoe bag, and then the third one goes in front of the shoe bag in the middle of the shoe bag, and that gives you at least 8 pockets to store small items that you want handy and yet don't know where to put because they're so small and get lost in the rest of the rig.
Seems like we're always looking for a way to store hairbrushes, creams, ointments, sprays, different personal things that we want out of the way a little bit. And with these tension bars and the little shoe bags, these little containers, anybody could add this into any place they wanted to put it where they wanted to hide a few things, maybe even in a wardrobe closet. And this would work not only in the older road treks, but in the newer ones. Any of them could use this.
Well, actually, we've had this, we got this idea from another road trekker. So we've actually been doing this for about 18 years.
It's great when we can all share the different ways we've figured out how to solve storage problems, where we can put things so that we can get to them easily.
And we're going to post a picture of this so that you can see it. Now, you can find these shoe bags at Walmart, on Amazon, or as Peggy suggested, at Camping World stores. Another great idea we could all use. And be sure to send me your tips and suggestions for the RV lifestyle. You can use the leave voicemail link at roadtrekking.com. Just click it and then use the built-in microphone on the computer or mobile device to record a message to me. You can do it over and over as many times as you want until you're satisfied. And then you just click a button and it comes right to my email box. If I use your tip in the podcast, we'll send you a free road trekking hat. I love hearing from you.
That was a cool tip. And they use those tension bars. Keeps it from flopping around when you're driving. And you can see how it looks in the picture. It'll be on our show notes page, which is for this episode. It's roadtrekking.com/116. Scroll down to Jennifer's tip of the week. And you'll see it. And those tips are really fun. We're getting lots of good ones from readers.
That's what I like when we go to these rallies and you go from one unit to the next, and people are always proud, the little things that they figured out, ways to personalize their RV and make life easier for them. And when they share it, it makes life easier for us.
Yes, it does. So do that. Send Jennifer the note, jennifer@roadtrekking.com, or you can include some pictures with that. But she loves to get those voicemail messages so we can feature your voice and have you explain it. So
maybe I'll have to get something other than a hat. Maybe they want something different.
What? Gee. Okay. You're in charge of
I'm
sending,
in charge
something
of sending
different.
Something
you're,
different.
You're in charge of sending something
thinking
different.
Thinking of something different.
Chocolate chip cookies always works.
That's
you want
true.
Tip from men, they'll send you anything
cookies.
For yeah. chocolate chip cookies.
That's true.
Well, Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by radpowerbikes.com. That's R-A-D-P-O-W-E-R bikes.com. They are an electric bike manufacturer that offers direct to consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes. These bikes are really awesome. They are the perfect companion to an RV travel. Three different bike models Rad Power Bikes makes. They fit a wide variety of rider wants and needs. They each can reach a 20 mile per hour speed, and they have zero pedaling with that. Or you can supplement that. They give you the choice to ride pedal free with throttle, use five levels of pedal assist for that extra boost, or combine pedaling with the extra thrust of the electric motor, however you want. It's perfect for people who want to get back into riding, or maybe are recovering from surgery or an injury, or looking for that that little bit of extra help. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge with these Rad Power bikes. They are very cool. But what is so neat about them, besides the quality, is that when you buy from Rad Power Bikes, you're buying directly from them. There is no markup. There's no middleman markup, no marketing budget, none of that stuff. It is all you and the manufacturer. So they're priced often half the price of comparable e-bikes on the market. And if you use the code phrase, the code road trekking on your order, your coupon code, you'll get an extra $75 off your purchase. RadPowerBikes.com.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions
Hi,
of the
Mike
week.
And Jennifer. This is Trish from Portland, Maine. I want to thank you for the podcast that you prepare and you share each week. I look forward to Wednesdays knowing that a new topic awaits. And after listening to many of your podcasts, I can say that I always have learned something new. But be it either one of Jennifer's tips, the experiences that both of you share of your travels, the off the beaten path reports, or one of your guests, I especially enjoyed a recent episode with Chuck Bartlebar. He was discussing bear safety. I didn't think that I really was a topic that I needed to brush up on, but boy, oh boy, what a volume of information that he provided. I really enjoyed listening and to everything he had to say. It was very informative. And I won't be forgetting it anytime soon. I do have a question. I'm hoping that you can share what you consider to be some of the top RV shows in the country. Our idea of what would make a great show is one that would have a good representation of makes and models. It would include all motorhome classes, A's, B's, C's, and even travel trailers. Seminars that are offered, and products. I've heard you mention many times the Hershey, Pennsylvania show. We have been to that a few years ago, and I do agree it is a good show. We'd like to visit some others. We are planning to go to the Super Show in Tampa this coming January of 2017, and that will be our first visit there. But, if there's any other shows that we may be missing that come to mind, I greatly appreciate you sharing that information. Thank you, Mike and Jennifer. Keep up the great work and appreciate your input. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Well, thank you, Trish. That is very kind of you to say all those nice things about it. Well, Trish, you got it figured out. An RV show is a lot of fun. They are kind of like a rally. They're running through a giant suburban shopping mall, you know, with all these cool things to see, but all geared to the things that you're most interested in. And you've identified the two of our favorites. The first one, of course, is the one in September every year at Hershey, Pennsylvania. They say they are America's largest RV show, and they certainly may be. That is a big show. However, the other one you mentioned that you're going to be attending, which is in Tampa, Florida, near Tampa, the annual RV Super Show, which is held every January, That, I think, is actually bigger. I really do. I think it is a bigger show. The RV Florida Super Show this year, by the way, is January 18th through the 22nd for the public. And it's at the Florida State Fairgrounds in Tampa. You can camp on site, all sorts of stuff. It is huge. The things that you identified that you like the most is our seminars and the ability to see all sorts of different RVs. And both of those shows certainly have those. They have the largest selection you'll find anywhere in the country. They are the biggest two shows out there. A close third is also in the fall of every year, and that's in California at Pasadena. The Pasadena show is huge. But I'll tell you, we always do a segment at the end, the RV calendar, and we'll list a couple of the ones that are coming up in the next 2 weeks. But the real season starts right after the first of the year. And I just was looking at the schedule. There's something like 24 big RV shows that start right after the first of the year, starting January 5th in Colorado, and then down to Houston, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Pittsburgh. One, you said you were from Maine. The Boston RV and Camping Expo is January 13th, right there in Boston. So it's not too far from you in Maine to drive down. But there's just a whole bunch of them. And Chicago has one. There's a big one in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We've been to that one in Grand Rapids, and that too is big. And what you want is exactly what you were saying. You want the ability to see every different RV, Class A, Class B, Class C, even pop-ups. And why do you want to look at the A's if you're only interested in the B or vice versa? Because you'll get ideas. You'll get ideas about floor plans and about little extras that are put as you can walk through these RVs and see them all laid out, ready to go, looking clean and sparkling. And you'll see real quickly what you like in floor plans. And you can visit all of them. You can see everything in really underneath one roof or in one location. Tampa is outside. Much of their exhibits are outside. And that's nice to be in Florida in January. So those are the things. But you've already picked the two that I think we find the most interesting. And that is Hershey and then Tampa. Those are the two big ones. So Tampa coming up in just a couple of weeks. So Trish, thank you for all your kind words. And maybe we'll run into you since we couldn't make the big show in Louisville, the trade show, the industry show this week. Maybe we can get down to the Tampa show because we will be down in Florida right after the first year, leaving actually for Florida Christmas Day. Thanks, Trisha. Again, it was great to hear from you. All right. It's cold out there. Time to winterize. And here's one of our listeners that had a question about winterizing.
I need to know if I can run the antifreeze through my hot water heater or if I must bypass that.
Well, you don't want to do that. I mean, there's really no need to put antifreeze in your hot water heater. Yeah, first of all, most water heaters would take 6 to 10 gallons, and that's a lot of antifreeze if you didn't bypass. So what most people do is, and everybody I know that winterizes, and it depends, of course, on what model you have, but you bypass it. Almost all modern RVs now have a bypass valve right in there. You can look in your instructions. And you bypass. You really don't even have to put antifreeze in the black tanks or in the gray tanks. Why? Because they're big enough. They can handle any expansion. If whatever's in there freezes, it's not going to break it unless it maybe, you know, had a hole, you know, it was filled to the brim. But most people have it emptied. As a precaution, you should always empty your black and your gray. But you don't have to put antifreeze in there. Now, I do. I put it in my freshwater tank. In my freshwater tank, and it runs through the whole system, and even a little bit of that goes into the black and the gray tanks as well, because I run until all of my faucets show that pink stuff coming through. But to your question about winterizing, you do not have to put antifreeze in the hot water heater. If you have a real old RV and it by chance does not have a bypass valve, they're easy to do. I could even do it myself. But take it to an RV dealer, your nearest one, and make sure you have one. And do not run the antifreeze through that. You don't have to. There's really no need to. All right. One other call that came in this week that I wanted to share. And we had a question. I remember in episode 115 last week, a woman bought a used RV and had solar panels on the roof, but she didn't know what to do with this solar panel and a whole bunch of wiring that was in the front seat of her vehicle on the floor of this used vehicle she bought. She didn't know what to do with that. And I said, you know, I don't know what they were doing with it either. Ask them. But one of our listeners had a possible suggestion. So let's listen into that.
I'm responding to a question from, I believe her name was Sue, about a loose solar panel in the front of her truck. I installed solar panels on my roof, and I did install one extra loose solar panel that I purposely installed for when the RV is parked in shade. I have a 40-foot cable on that panel, so I place it within 40 feet of sun from the RV. Possibly that's what the prior owner intended for this panel. I hope this helps.
Okay, well, maybe that was it. Sounds reasonable to me. You know, you wouldn't want to just leave it lying on the front seat. I would assume that there's an easy way to disconnect that cable, that there's a plug, and then you could just store it wherever you wanted. The truth of the matter is, there's one solar panel is not going to give you very much juice. Now, you know, it'll help top off your house batteries, but it's not going to be that great. So, it's no big deal if you just take it, unplug it, and put it away, or do as our caller suggested. That's another thing you can do. One solar panel will give you a little bit, but not a whole lot. So, hey, we'd love to get your questions. Here's how you can be featured on a podcast.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question. Leave a comment. Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, Nevada. Three dealers owned by the same folks, different parts of the country, all bringing you the largest inventories of Class Bs that you'll find anywhere. If you're in the market for a Class B and you know they're in very high demand, that is why you want to check with these three dealers, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, and WagonTrailRV.com. And by the way, anybody who's near Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, make sure you stop in. They've got a brand new showroom. They've remodeled the dealership. It is really sharp. It is a great dealership. All three dealerships have new and used models in stock on the lot right now. Here's our pal Dan the Van Man telling us about what they've got, at least at Van City RV.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. And if you're still looking to travel during the holiday season, we have some great savings on some used Class B Mercedes-based motorhomes. You can check those out at VanCityRV.com. Hey, we also have some great savings on some 2016 model motorhomes. You get some great year-end closeouts on some Snooks and Gallerias. You can check those out at VanCityRV.com and give your salesman a call today.
All right. Thank you much, Dan. VanCityRV.com. CrestonRV.com and WagonTrailRV.com. Well, at the big RV show in Louisville, they had a big presentation where they identified different areas of growth and where the growth in the RV industry was going to be. And one of the areas that they were telling everybody has to do with those who are seeking adventure. They're typically baby boomers who are in pretty good physical condition, who are used to hiking and biking and being very active. Many of them have come, you know, gone through the jogging craze and all that stuff, but they still love being active. Well, in our interview section of the week today, I've got one for all of you who fit that category, who love to get out and be in nature. And this is particularly aimed at those tens of thousands of RVers who are going to spend part or all of the winter in the Sunshine State of Florida. Now, many of you know, we divide our time between Michigan and Florida. It seems like we've got a place now that we can use as our base of operation, a little condo on the Emerald Coast on the Gulf of Mexico. And we just are amazed at all the offerings for things you can do outdoors in Florida all year round. And we came across something called the Florida Trail. It is a congressionally designated national scenic trail. Now, there are a number of national scenic trails throughout the country in 11 different states. This one, though, is probably the best kept secret. It is I mean, it is really a rival to the Appalachian Trail, although it's all in one state. It's about 1,300 miles long, and it offers a continuous, permanent, non-motorized recreation opportunity for hiking and all the compatible activities that that brings. Over its length, it showcases this incredible biodiversity from the Everglades to trails and prairies and farmland and deep woods. That gives you a sense of the old Florida, the rich culture of Florida. It is a really cool place. To help us come up with that, we interview Alex Stigliano. He is the program director of the trail, and he's going to tell you about it. We'll put a link to the trail and a map to it, all that stuff that you want. You can find that right on the show notes page for this episode, which is roadtrekking.com/116. Joining us right now, Alex Stigliano from the Florida Trail, and we're pretty excited about learning about this trail. Hasn't had a lot of publicity nationwide, but tell us about it, Alex. A lot of snowbirds ready to go hiking.
That's right. Well, it's probably one of the best-kept national scenic trails, secret. And we've got 1,200 miles of footpath that you can explore here in Florida that'll take you through swamps, through hardwood forests, through all kinds of different habitats that you wouldn't experience if you just stuck to the Orlando Beltway. You got to get out of the city. You got to experience the real Florida, and that's really what the Florida Trail is all about.
Well, tell us its history, how it began, where it starts, where it ends, how long is this trail, and most importantly, how RV-friendly is it for folks?
You know, it starts down west of Miami on Tamiami Trail, which is a smaller road south of 75 at the Oasis Visitor Center. It's National Park Service property in the Big Cypress National Preserve.
I know right where
that's the southern end of it. And then you can walk up through the middle of the state. You have two options. Go east of Orlando, or you can go west of Orlando, and then it'll curve around into the Panhandle, and it'll actually end where I'm at today on Santa Rosa Island in the Gulf Islands National Seashore. It's a beautiful white sand golf beach. There's lots of different trailheads, and so a person can access the trail from anywhere along the way. You can find an RV park nearby and then make a day of your hiking.
It's funny, when you announce where you are, I am probably 10 miles from you right now because I am just over on Okaloosa Island, and I will be out your way tonight as we record this this episode of the podcast. This is the big super moon, and I'm hoping for those clear skies to hold, and I want to take some photos out there on the seashore. So I know you've got Fort Pickens as a great RV park right at that end of the Panhandle, and then there are literally RV parks all along the trail. How did this trail start, and how long has it been in existence?
Well, it started with an idea that folks in Florida wanted to be able to hike. They were sick of going north to go hiking up on the Appalachian Trail. So in 1966, the founder of our organization, Jim Kern, met up with four other friends, and they started just bushwhacking through the Florida wilderness, and they called it a trail. And then that just kept on building interest, and lots of folks got involved. And, 1983, it became a national scenic trail. There was enough of it there to warrant the Congress making an amendment to the National Trail Systems Act and added the Florida National Scenic Trail. So you got your Appalachian Trail, your Pacific Crest Trail, and a few others. And then you also have the Florida Trail. So it's been around for a little bit. It's still a work in progress. As people walk from the south end to the north end, which they'll usually start doing at the beginning of January, it's a lot cooler. It's a good time of year to go. The water levels are a little lower. And, they start down there, and they can walk all the way to the Panhandle. It's about 1,200 miles, and most of it is footpath. I think the story of the Florida National Scenic Trail is the story of dedication of our volunteers. We probably have one of the older volunteer bases. I will say that most of our folks are retirees, so your average age of the folks that are out there maintaining and building this trail are in their 60s, which is pretty cool. It's very inspiring for me to work with. And they're actually the life and blood of the trail, and they're what keeps it available to the public.
Now, talk about some of the things you can do in the trail. How friendly is it for cyclists, for example? A lot of people love to do long bike rides.
Yeah, certain sections are more friendly than others. Some areas you actually can't even have a bike. There's three different designated wilderness areas where you can't have any mechanized equipment, including bicycles. But there are some very bicycle-friendly areas. There's the Cross Florida Greenway. That section of the trail is bicycle-friendly. You've also got the Lake Okeechobee section where you can bicycle around the entire lake up on the Herbert Hoover Dyke. Built in the 50s. But, it just depends on where you are. You just need to check the state park or state forest where you're going to be hiking and find out if you can bring your bicycle as well.
So, and of course, we'll have a link to your website, which is Floridatrail, all one word, .org, and folks can learn it there. There's a lot of talk I've heard about preserving old Florida. And for folks who are used to new Florida and all of the development, tell our listeners, Alex, about old Florida. What is old Florida?
Well, you know, old Florida, or it's also been called the real Florida or wild Florida, it's the home of the very first city in the United States of America in St. Augustine. You know, it's the home of some of the oldest cattle farms. The Spaniards came and brought cattle and started rearing them here. And, the cattle, industry here in Florida is something else. I mean, I've been out there hiking on the trail, and you see a guy on a horse, and you're like, that's a cowboy. Like, you feel like you're out west. I mean, they're rustling cattle and everything else. So there's the cattle industry. The real Florida, old Florida, is undeveloped Florida. So, fortunately for us, you've got your swamps where swamps, I think, people may think of that as a bad thing, but if you don't mind getting your feet wet and you're there to observe and be amazed, you will be, because it's the home of one of the most biodiverse animal populations, plant populations in the world. I mean, you can go out there and see birds that are endangered. There's the American alligator. None of our hikers have ever been eaten by an American alligator on the trail, but you might see other things like the Florida panther. You can see some amazing creatures that are out there on the trail.
Now,
basically, old Florida and the real Florida is basically undeveloped Florida, and then that's where the real magic is.
And I looked at the website, and there are lots and lots of RV-friendly places where you can camp, you can hike in, you can walk in. Any facilities along the trail itself in terms of restrooms and what other things do people need to know? Obviously, they need to look at a map and figure out where they are, but in general, how many amenities do you have with the trail?
Yeah, those kind of resources are buried. I mean, you've got some parts of the trail, like northeast of Orlando, in Seminole County. That trail, that portion of the trail, has been paved, and there's all kinds of resources along there, bathrooms and different park, features. But then you've got areas of the trail that you won't see anybody or anything for 30 miles. It's just that remote. So, getting familiar with the area that you're going to go visit is super important. And I think that one of the better resources, in addition to our website and our own map set, is a lady named Sandra Friend, and her organization is called Florida Hikes. It's all one word, floridahikes.com. Mm-hmm. And she has some guidebooks that are really, really important to the community, because she keeps everybody aware of all the different resources that are available. She also has an application for your phone, so if you have a smartphone, you can walk through the trail and you can find the closest trailhead. get on the trail. You can interact with other users, and they can give you notes about, oh, we're on this section of trail, and it turns out there's a red cockaded woodpecker nest like right off the trail. You guys can't, just don't miss it. Look up there for that. Yeah, which is a great way of building the community of users. So I would say Florida Hikes is a really great resource. And then, of course, getting on our website, you can do some research, and you'll be prepared.
All right, Florida Hikes. We'll put links to your website and Florida Hikes as well on the show notes for this episode. Alex, what's your favorite section of the trail?
That's a hard question to answer. It depends on what I want to do. if I'm looking for a little day experience, or if I want to go out there for several days. If I want to grab a rope swing and, go into a river. I mean, there's a lot of different experiences to have. But I have to say it was probably the section I least expected to fall in love with. But north of Lake Okeechobee is the Kissimmee River. And our trail goes on the east side of the Kissimmee River through a Florida State Park called Kissimmee Prairie Preserve. Mm-hmm. And it's got one of the darkest night skies, which maybe not tonight with the super moon, but it's going to have like some of the best stargazing in the entire state. And it's a big prairie. I mean, you could look across and you're in like maybe 100 square miles of land, and there's not a tree anywhere. It's just grasslands, completely open. And now if you go out there in the middle of the summer, which I did the very first time, it may not be very comfortable. It's very hot.
Yeah.
But I went out there in the winter and then went out there at nighttime, and I have to say it was magical. And I fell in love with that area. I mean, it was just so open. You're talking about a sky as big as it can get. I mean, huge sky from horizon to horizon. Yeah. And lots and lots of stars. And so I have to say that was probably an unexpected find, but I ended up falling in love with it.
Now, how about longer term backpacking in? Is there camping facilities? Can you camp dispersed camping along the way and state land? What about those who want to backpack in and camp their way as they hike the trail?
Yeah, primitive camping is available along the entire trail. We have those marked on our maps, and so those are available. And then for the people that are doing long treks, every so often they're going to come to an actual campground, which is usually a welcome sign. You can get a shower, use an actual campground, have some amenities like electricity and things like that. So it's pretty varied, primitive camping all the way up to your, we even have some facilities along the way, cabins. There's a pretty unique outfitter. When you first get out north of Big Cypress, there is the Seminole Reservation. Seminole American Indians Reservation, and they have these really great cabins and bunk beds that are available in what they call chicky huts. And they're a traditional structure that they've been building for a long, long time. And it's, made out of thatch. It's a big thatch-roofed structure and with really high ceilings and kind of open sides, and you can even stay in places like that. I mean, it's completely unique. I mean, the opportunities that you have along the way.
Well, it is, as you said, one of the best kept secrets out there, and there are so many of our listeners who spend this time of year in Florida, and of course, fall, winter, and spring before it gets really hot. That's my favorite time in Florida anyway. We hope to see you out there on the trail, and I have been on parts of it. The Lake Okeechobee part, I've ridden my bike around that, and that's an amazing piece of country. It is cowboy country, as you said. I understand they even drive the cows down the town there in Lake Okeechobee. They have a big roundup, just like out west. Parts of Florida that people are unaware of, and Alex Stigliano, I want to thank you for spending time and telling us about the Florida Trail Association. We'll see you out there.
Thank you, Mike.
News.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Well, the big story for anybody who has a love for the Great Smoky Mountains National Park are the devastating fires that have hit that region, particularly the resort towns of Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. They have forced more than 14,000 people to evacuate. Officials say the blaze has caused the area to literally resemble the apocalypse. Thousands of residents and visitors in the Smoky Mountains area and in Gatlinburg evacuated. Hundreds of structures damaged and destroyed by fire, which is the worst to hit the area in anybody's memory. The center of Gatlinburg looks okay, according to local folks on the scene, as we report this on Tuesday, the 30th of November. This is being released on December 1st. And they believe that it has turned around and that the worst is over. The mayor of Gatlinburg said today, Tuesday, that half the city was impacted by the blaze. He vows they'll rebuild the city. 12 people injured in wildfires. Three people suffered burns while trying to flee. They've been transferred from a Knoxville hospital to Vanderbilt University's Medical Center in Nashville, which has a burn unit there. A fourth person is being treated for facial burns in Knoxville. No missing people or deaths at this point reported. The fire spread Monday night by winds that at times exceeded 87 miles an hour. Preliminary surveys indicate the fires wiped out more than 100 buildings on the Westgate Smoky Mountain Resort and Spa. Get this, as well as a 16-story hotel gone, burnt, leveled. In addition, Black Bear Falls was believed to have lost every cabin in the area. The fire chief for Gatlinburg, Greg Miller, says this is one for the history books. The likes of this have never been seen. He added that about 14 buildings remain ablaze in the city. This was as of Tuesday afternoon. Firefighters going door to door to make sure no one has been overlooked. They say, again, 14,000 residents, tourists evacuated from the Gatlinburg area. Portions of Dollywood were evacuated as wind speeds topped 70 miles an hour in some parts. Now, I'm going to link to a story on the show notes page for this episode, so be sure and check it. There's a video that they of some of the local people driving through their area. It's just an amazing video to see how horrible this was. So not a lot of word yet from officials at the Smoky Mountains National Park, because the fire is all around it and in the park as well, but particularly around the areas of Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. So check out that story, and you can find that in the show notes, which is roadtrekking.com/116. Just scroll down to the news section. Well, from the fires at the Great Smoky National Park, we're going to go up to Kitchener, Ontario. And our friends at the Erwin-Heimer Group, they have announced a pilot program there to build autonomous self-driving RVs. Yes, you heard that right. Now, don't think this is going to show up next year at any of the shows, but this is a pretty big story. Erwin-Heimer Group has become the first RV manufacturer in Canada to be approved as a participant in the Government of Ontario's Automated Vehicle Pilot Program. Along with the University of Waterloo, Heimer engineers are approved for this program. They're going to test autonomous vehicles on public roads. That means that Erwin-Heimer Group is likely going to be the first RV manufacturer in the world with a government permit for testing automated vehicles. This is a pretty major story. The Ministry of Transportation for Ontario held a big press conference this week at the university, talking about at a test track at the region, the Waterloo test track, to announce that Heimer would be a part of all of this. Jim Hamill, of course, the president or the CEO and president of Erwin-Heimer Group in North America, that's folks who build road trek, says that this is all part of their innovations, leaving the old way of thinking, trying to build RVs completely different. And what that means, I don't know, but we're going to try and talk in the next few weeks to Joel Adams, who's the Director of Engineering and Innovation, who is heading up this project. And we'll see what that looks like in the future. automated, autonomous, self-driving RVs. Amazing. Now, I've talked before about Louisville, Kentucky. That is the site this week of the RVIA, the Recreation Vehicle Industry Association show. It's a trade show, and it is only open to people in the industry, but it is it's held all this week. The first starts the first Monday after Thanksgiving every year. And it opened up this week with just some real excitement. It looks like that the sales and deliveries of RVs has reached a 40-year high. And for all practical experience, that means in the history of the RV business, because it really isn't any older than that, really, as it's structured now. They're just doing a bang-up job. They expect this increase to continue next year. And there's just a real excitement there in Louisville about an industry. Lots of new 2017 models on display, and I'm sure there'll be stories coming out over the week. But you look for lots of stories, but particularly about just the boom in the RV industry, how it is now reaching a 40-year peak. One final story, this one from Montana. How'd you like to be like Scott Lindell? He was awakened about 1:30 in the morning not long ago. And he was out. He's out there in a pop-up trailer. He's deer hunting, and his first thought was that the trailer's shaking and that the wind must be blowing really hard. So he's asleep. He gets up, puts on some clothes because it's kind of chilly out there. And he says, "I didn't realize how light those campers were." The guy's 63 years old. I was really being shook around, he said. So he got outside, rousted himself out of his nice sleeping bag, stepped outside, and instead of encountering gale force winds, he found a large bull moose literally doing battle with his sleeping chambers as another bull watched. He later discovered antler holes poking through the camper's fabric right around the pillow where his head had been resting, and he had a busted taillight on his pickup. "Maybe I was snoring," he said. He didn't know. The bull didn't stop, even though he came out. And he started yelling at his nephew, who was with him, camping with him. And his nephew turned on the lights of his vehicle. And between the two of them yelling and the lights, the bull moose finally wandered away. Lindell later on went in and reported it. He was camping in the Red Feather Lake area in Montana, west of Fort Collins, along the Powdery River. He reported it to the state's Division of Wildlife, but he says they never heard of any events. He said they wouldn't believe my story. Now, bull moose are known to be aggressive during the fall mating season, typically in the months of September and October. Female moose also well known for attacking hikers if the mama moose is protective of a calf. But a bull moose tangling with a truck camper in November, well, that's what apparently happened. And Lindell says, whatever, for some reason I was in his space and he didn't like me. There you go. I think I said it was a pop-up camper at the title of the story. It was actually a truck camper. So, all right, that's our news of the week, brought to you this part of the section of the podcast every week by Alde, A-L-D-E, the only name in heat that you need to know for your RV. The Alde hydronic system brings many features and many benefits not found with any other product. It is a silent and a radiant heat. It provides this warm, even, natural heated interior. If you camp in cool weather, and you use the standard forced air heat, you know how irritatingly noisy it is, especially when you're trying to sleep. And you also know how dry it gets, not with the Alde hydronic system. It is a silent heat. It's like the radiant baseboard heat that you find in high-end luxury homes. It's a heating system that is great for your pets. It gives you increased interior space because it essentially combines two systems in one, your heating system and your hot water heater. It is so efficient, the whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC and will extend the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. And you can heat with electric or gas, multiple options and amenities. The feature that Jennifer and I have on ours that we like the best is the heated floors. We absolutely love that. Anyway, you can check it out. Alde is brought to you on many different RV platforms now. Check with your dealer if you're shopping. Road Trek has them, Winnebago has them, and other dealers. Alde, A-L-D-E. It's the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
All right, time to check in with our buddy Steve Van Dinter from Verizon Wireless. He's got some tech gifts that RVers may want to consider for this Christmas shopping season. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Well, road warriors and travel junkies alike know you can't have a successful trip without involving tech. And this year, there are more gadgets than ever to make sure your trip is a smooth one and you stay at least a little connected to home. Well, first up is Pixel, the phone by Google. With this phone, you'll want to take plenty of pictures, and you can store unlimited numbers of them thanks to its unlimited cloud storage. Plus, find out where the locals go to eat by simply asking the Google Assistant. It comes in two sizes as well, so it's perfect whether you prefer large screens or smaller ones. Next, we have the Ellipsis 8 HD tablet. With an 8-inch screen, it easily fits into carry-on luggage or your lap. It also has front-facing speakers, a low-light camera, and a full HD display. And I'm guessing this quickly becomes one of your favorite travel companions. And finally, we all know there's no place like home, so wouldn't it be great if you could check in and see how things are going back there while you're away? With the Nest Cam, you can. Simply set this camera in the room you'd like to monitor, and now no matter where you are, you can check in with your phone or a tablet and see a live HD stream. Plus, Nest Cam lets you hear audio and even speak back to your home as well. Because sometimes even the most independent of cats likes to know that someone is still watching. Well, you can find all these ideas and more at any Verizon store or at VerizonWireless.com. With this week's Traveling Technology Tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
All right. Thank you, Steve. This part of the podcast is brought to you every week by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable wireless network, more than 112 million retail connections nationwide. It is the official wireless provider for road trekking as we travel around the country. That's all I use is the Verizon network. It is the most reliable. I can connect. I send my NBC technology reports in every week over it. I do the podcast, upload these massive files for the podcast. I have all my email. I work from the road, and it's all made possible by Verizon, which gives me this reliable 4G LTE network connection almost anywhere I go. I can count on one hand the times as we've traveled this country, as we boondock all across this country in places far off the grid, maybe four times, maybe five times in 5 years that I didn't have a network signal with Verizon. And those were in some really remote places. So it's the only one I use. And if you, it's not just me saying this, you look at any of the surveys, they're number one for multiple tests year after year, number one in network quality performance, number one in performance satisfaction among users, and number one in overall network performance in all of these studies. So Verizon, the official provider of wireless technology for the Road Trekking RV podcast. Check them out. They will do the same job for you.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, I want to share one that I don't think I've ever mentioned this before. It's just you hear me talk a lot about how much I love the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It is, really, if I could talk Jennifer into it, I would move up there in a heartbeat. I love the UP. Yeah, they get a lot of snow in the wintertime. In fact, we're going up there in just a little over a month, month and a half, 2 months, maybe 2 months. January 22nd, I think, is our annual winter camp up in the Upper Peninsula, Tequamanon Falls up there. But the place I want to tell you about right now is a place a little to the south and east of that. It is it's actually known as Palm Brooks State Park. And Kitchi-Iti-Kipi Springs. Got that? Kitchi-Iti-Kipi Springs. Means big springs in the native Ojibwe. This is one of our favorite stops. It is a very interesting natural attraction. The Kitchi-Iti-Kipi Spring. Try to say that. Kitchi-Iti-Kipi, the big spring. No camping here, by the way, and it's a day park only, but it is a must-see anytime you're in the area, no matter how many times you've seen it. This is a gorgeous crystal-clear spring. It's 200 feet across, 40 feet deep. It's the largest freshwater spring in Michigan. Over 10,000 gallons a minute gush from fissures in the underlying limestone, and the flow continues throughout the year at a constant 45 degrees Fahrenheit. What's neat is you get there, there's this self-piloting raft that takes you slowly across the spring, and you can look down in this crystal clear water. There's huge lake trout there circling below you, and the bubbling spring creates ever-changing shapes and forms. What I love about Palms Brook State Park in the spring is that they're open all year round, so you can see it any time of the year. You can go in by snowmobiles, you can snowshoe around there. It's really a neat place. Now, the park's road is unplowed in the middle of the wintertime, but you still can snowshoe in, and it's well worth it. I'll put a link up, and you can look at it later on in a couple of photos as well, but it's a pretty cool place, and it is off the beaten path. The best way to get to it is off US 2, which runs along the southern end of the Upper Peninsula, and it's near the town of Manistique in the UP. Palms Brook State Park and Kitchi-Iti-Kipi Spring, the big spring. It's well worth you seeing.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
All right, I talked early in answering a reader's question about RV shows and why they are all important, and I noted then that after the first of the year, the season really starts to rock and roll. There's 24 RV shows scheduled throughout North America starting in January. And I will start giving all of those out next week on the podcast. And we'll start mentioning some of them. I can't do all 24 in one shot, but we'll put links up to everything. And there's a link always on the show notes page. If you go to roadtrekking.com/116 for this episode, scroll down to RV calendar and you'll get the details I'm going to give now. And there's a link you can check for a resource that lists all the scheduled shows that are coming up. But there's two between now and Christmas that are worth checking out. One is this weekend, and it's in Fort Myers, Florida. It is the Fall Clean Sweep RV Show. This is the place where you can get great end-of-season bargains, by the way. It's at the CenturyLink Sports Complex in Fort Myers, Florida. It's December 2nd through the 4th. And then at the other end of the country, out in the Palm Springs area, out in California, Palm Springs area RV show and sale. That's next weekend, December 8th through the 11th. And that is in the Riverside County Fairgrounds in Indio, California. So check it out. Both of those shows coming up. And then that after the Indio show on December 8th through 11th, everybody takes a break until after Christmas. But an RV show, always a great way for you to see what's the latest, to get ideas about what you can do with yours, or to see what kind of a deal you can get on a new one. They are well worth worth checking out. So there you go. Again, we got a link on the show notes for this episode, roadtrekking.com/116. Scroll all the way down to RV calendar, and you can get a link and more information about these and other upcoming shows.
Traveling North America in a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
All right, that's the end of the show for this episode. I want to thank you so very, very much for tuning in. Forgive the strain in my voice. You don't know how many times I coughed in the middle of the show, but through the magic of editing, I don't think you'll hear any of them. It's been great being with you. And Merry Christmas. Now that it's December, I think we can say that. We got through Thanksgiving. So Jennifer and I first want to say Merry Christmas. And just remember the first part of that word, because Jesus is the reason for the season. So Merry Christmas to you. We hope you have a great Christmas time. We'll have lots coming up next week. So many things happening in the RV news. So be sure and tune in then. Use the leave voicemail link, if you will, on the roadtrekking.com website. Please check that. You can ask a question, make a comment, and we would love to get it and make you a part of the program as well. Thanks for listeners. Oh, hey, be sure and be a part of our mailing list. You know about our mailing list? We send out a special newsletter free every Monday morning to subscribers. We're pushing 22,000 now for that newsletter. And you can sign up for free right on the blog, roadtrekking.com, and we'd love to have you be a part of that. So, till next week, everybody, have a great week out there. We'll see you road trekking.